The next morning, Han was waiting for Chewie to come back from moving the Falcon when the tutor's droid approached him.
"Master Solo, if I might have a word?"
"Yeah?"
Han asked tiredly as he leaned back in the chair.
"I now carry a wide range of highly capable scanners and comparators, and I have performed repeated sweeps of the vicinity in between the execution of my other duties."
"Good for you." Han was not really paying attention. Why did every droid feel the need to buttonhole him and yammer on about its specs and capabilities?
"And good for you, too, Master Solo. I do think you would be well advised to take what I am saying more seriously."
"And why is that?"
"Because you are being watched."
That got his attention.
"If you mean the CDF agents..."
"Judging by her behavior, I believe the watcher in question is doing her best to stay out of their sight. She has stationed herself in the empty villa a short distance from here. She watches from an upstairs window, doing her best to conceal herself. I managed to record a few low-resolution flat-image shots of her in polarized infrared."
Han had expected Q-9 to project a fuzzy holographic image on the wall or something. Instead, there was a quiet whirring noise, and a flat-image hologram rolled out of the printout slot in Q-9's chest. It was Kalenda, the NRI agent. What the devil was she up to, and why hadn't she tried to contact Han? The only answer he could come up with was that she didn't trust the CDF either. Han thought for a moment.
"You've done very well, Q-9. This is vital information. But I must order you to tell no one else about it."
"Then this watcher is an enemy, sir?"
No, a friend. I don't exactly know what she intends, but she is on our side. The problem is that we are not at all sure the CDF is friendly. If their agents discovered her, we could lose a very useful asset."
"Useful for what?"
Han shook his head. "I don't know yet. Before I could tell you what we'll need her for, I'll have to figure out what game we're playing." Han handed the hologram back to Q-9. "Destroy this. Keep a very low-key eye on our friend."
"Quite well, sir."
"Thank you, Q-9. You may well have just done the most important work in your life." The next day, the whole family, along with Ebrahim and his droid Q-9, piled into a hover car the Governor General had loaned them and took off with Han at the controls. Ebrahim had suggested that the best way for the children to learn Corellian history would be for them to visit a large archaeological dig not far from Coronet. The autopilot alert beeped, and an indicator light came on as they got close to the dig. Han looked ahead and saw a huge pit, a dark blot on the landscape.
"Ebrahim! Is that where we're going?"
"Yes, sir. At least that looks like what I have heard described."
"You've never been here before? I thought you were going to be our guide."
"And so I shall be. I have read all the published papers concerning it and talked with many of the principal investigators. It is the first major archaeological site ever studied on this planet, and thus of considerable interest. It is just that I have never before been able to get clearance to get to it."
"So you're using the Chief of State of the New Republic as your personal ticket into this place?"
Han asked, his tone somewhere between annoyance and amusement.
"Absolutely. How could I pass up the opportunity?"
"This is the first ever archaeological dig on the whole planet?" Leia asked. "How could that be?"
"I believe it comes from the sudden strong speciesist feelings on Corellia and the other worlds in this system. The past has become an issue of pride. Who was here first? Who has the strongest claim to this or that spot of land or this or that planet?"
"Political archaeology," Han said. "It's a new one on me. What are we going to see down there, anyway?"
"No one quite knows what it is. It is an extremely ancient system of artificial underground chambers, many of them collapsed or filled in by sediment. Some of the chambers are in quite good condition, however. They are full of machinery of one sort or another, and no one knows what the machines are for, or who built them, or why."
On the surface of the dig, workers, all of them human, were rushing in all directions, moving piles of dirt and debris out of the excavation in big roller cars. Droids of all sorts and descriptions were carrying various sorts of hardware in and out of the huge pit.
Leia, Han said under his breath, look at the uniforms on the workers.
What about them?
They're the same as the ones on the fun boys who roughed me up. The only thing missing is the Human League armbands.
A man of middle age, looking rather on the portly and well-fed side, was coming toward them. He was dark-skinned, with short-cropped black hair and a broad, toothy smile.
Greetings to you all. I am General Bryman Yarar. Welcome to our little project.
He bowed respectfully to Leia.
Madam Organa Solo, it is an honor to have you here.
He stuck his hand out to Han.
Captain Solo, an honor as well.
Thanks, Han said slowly as he accepted the proffered hand.
We're glad to be here.
General of what, if I might ask, were you in the war?
And on what side, he wanted to ask, but did not.
What? Oh, that,
the general said, clearly a bit nonplussed.
An honorific only, I am afraid. An informal title in a private organization.
The Human League, perhaps? Han asked. Yarar's smile dimmed, if just for a moment.
Why, yes, they provide the bulk of our financing. But we try not to advertise that too broadly. Some people might get the wrong idea. But the workers today are from a Human League heritage squad working to reveal our species' glorious past here on Corellia. Are you familiar with our work, Captain Solo?
I'm becoming so, Han said.
And these must be your children,
Yarar said, sweeping on past the awkward moment. He squatted down and gave Jason a friendly wink.
I'm surely glad to meet you all.
Yeah, Jason said, sidling back a bit. Glad to meet you, too.
Jaina forced a little smile and left it at that. Anakin didn't move a muscle, but simply stared at Yarar. Yarar stood up again, still smiling.
Shall we head in? He asked.
Sure, Han said. He noticed that Yarar had completely ignored both Chewbacca and Ebrahim.
Maybe the grown-ups found all this stuff interesting, but Jason most assuredly was finding his attention starting to wander. At first it had been kind of fun to be underground in the strange old tunnels. That General Yarar guy was all full of excitement and enthusiasm about all the mysterious old machines they had found. But Jason didn't see why. Most of the machines they were finding looked as if they were a million times worse off than the rooms themselves. The lettering, if it was lettering, on some of the machines was hard to make out, and General Yarar told them it wasn't in any alphabet or other writing system anyone had ever found. Even Ebrahim seemed a bit disappointed by the tour. Something else seemed odd to Jason. He had read some books about archaeology and about how you always had to be real careful about leaving everything just as you found it and being sure to go through all the crud you dug out to make sure that you didn't miss some incredibly vital clue that was hidden there. Well, they weren't doing that here. And they weren't, as best Jason could tell, doing much to investigate the things they did find. They weren't even digging them out all the way. It was like they were only digging far enough to make sure that they hadn't found the one thing they were looking for, and then moving on. At first, Jason and his brother and sister had been leading the pack, scooting ahead, eager to see the next room. By now, however, all three children were hanging back, bored by it all. Jason was following behind the adults, with Jaina and Anakin behind him. But then Jason turned around and noticed they weren't following anymore. He went back around the corner of the tunnel to see what was up. Anakin was staring fixedly at a spot on the floor of the tunnel, muttering to himself.
What's he doing? Jason asked.
Jaina shook her head.
I don't know exactly. He just walked over to that spot and stopped dead and started talking to the floor.
There! Anakin suddenly announced, and pointed in the opposite direction of the side tunnel the grown-ups had gone down. He turned and started trotting down it, still staring intently at the tunnel floor. By the time the twins caught up with him, he was already headed down a ramp that led down into a lower level.
What is he after? Jaina asked.
Jason shook his head. I don't know, but I think the General's guys have been looking for something in particular, and I've got a hunch that Anakin's just found it.
Q-9 floated along on his repulsors, following behind the tour group, not feeling at his most useful. He was strongly of the opinion that droids should be useful at all times and in all places. Suddenly it registered with him that the children were no longer with the group. For a full tenth of a millisecond he toyed with the idea of sounding the alarm, but then rejected the idea. Perhaps their hosts would take it ill if they found out the children had been wandering off where they should not have been. No. After all, he had installed all that sophisticated detection and sensing equipment. It was time that he put it to use.
Suddenly Anakin stopped dead in his tracks. All the twins could see in the gloomy passage was that he was standing in front of a stretch of corridor that looked exactly like every other stretch they had seen. But Anakin was literally hopping with excitement. "Here," he muttered under his breath. Holding his finger about 10 centimeters away from the floor, he moved his hand toward the wall, and then slowly up it. "He's tracing something," Jaina said in a whisper. "Up," Anakin said. "I need to go up. Let me up on your shoulders."
Jaina knelt down next to her brother, and he scrambled up on her shoulders. She stood up carefully, Anakin swaying back and forth just a little bit as she overbalanced a trifle. There was a slight shower of pebbles and dust.
"Great! I just got a face full of gravel," Jaina spluttered. "What happened?"
"It's a panel," Jason said. "Like a keypad panel, but different. It's a 5x5 grid of little green buttons."
"Done," said Anakin at last. "Let me down."
Jaina complied eagerly.
"But now what?" she asked. "What happens now?"
And then, with the dull rumble of heavy machinery, a 10-meter-wide section of the tunnel wall in front of them slid out of the way, dropping down into the floor. There was a clattering of pebbles, and a feeble cloud of dampish dust shook loose from the wall. Behind the false wall was a huge, seamless panel of faultless, gleaming silver. Suddenly a seam line appeared in the silver wall, and a huge section of it swung back. A gleaming light poured out into the tunnel as the door opened, and the children had to shield their eyes for a moment before they could see clearly. Inside the door was a long corridor made of the same silver stuff as the door. The corridor seemed to be open at the other end, but they could not make out clearly what was there. There did not seem to be any sort of place for the light to come from, but it came just the same.
"What is it, Anakin?"
Jaina asked her little brother. He shrugged.
"Don't know. I just felt it there, and I followed it. Don't know what it is."
"Well," said Jason, with far more confidence than he felt, "we'll never find out here. Come on." At last they reached the end of the corridor and stood looking down at something that Jason had never seen before. The floor went past the end of the corridor and ended in a view platform about 5 meters across. The platform hung out in empty space with no guardrails or any other sort of protection around the edge. It stood at the apex of an impossibly deep artificial cavern made of the same silver-colored material. The cavern was in the shape of a sharply angled cone, with the platform at the point and the base of the cone on the floor of the cavern far below. Jason let go of his brother's hand, got down on his hands and knees, and crept out toward the edge of the platform. He stuck his head out over the edge and swallowed hard. Far below, he could make out other conical shapes, much smaller than the cavern itself, yet still extremely large. There were 7 of the cones, with 6 in a circle around the central 7th. All of them seemed to have the same height-to-width proportions as the cavern itself.
"What in the name of space have you children gotten yourselves into now?"
Jason nearly jumped out of his skin and right off the platform.
"Hello, Q-9. Thanks for almost scaring me to death."
He scooted back in toward the center of the platform before sitting himself up and getting to his feet.
"Are the others looking too, or just you?"
"No, at least they weren't when I left them."
"Good. Jaina, Anakin, we've got to get out of here."
"But we just got here," protested Anakin.
I know, but do you want General Yarrar's people finding this whatever it is? It's got to be what they're looking for, and it's got to be very big and important."
Anakin thought for a moment, and then shook his head violently. "No.
No, can't let that general guy in here."
The three children turned toward the droid.
"Oh, I quite agree. However, I do think it would be best if you allowed me to take as complete a scan as I can before we depart. We might well want a record of this place for future reference.
Okay, Jaina said. Do it, but do it quick. Jason's right. We have to get out of here. Come on, Anakin.
Han squinted a bit as he piloted the hover car through the dark night of Corellia, back toward the bright lights of Coronet. The interior of the hover car was dark and quiet, with the sounds of sleep coming from the rear seats. Chewbacca, along with everyone else, was asleep, with Anakin curled up in his lap. Even Q-9 had powered down.
"Can we stop having fun yet?" Han asked.
Leia, in the co-pilot seat, smiled sleepily. "Just about, as soon as we get home."
"Yeah, wherever that is."
The trade summit opened the next day, and starting tonight they would be staying not at the villa but at Corona House. They had been playing tourist all across the main continent of Corellia for more days than Han could count at this point. He had lost track of the sights they had seen. Even ignoring sightseeing burnout, it had not been easy keeping up the pose of a carefree tourist family, especially not after the twins had told them what Anakin had found in General Yarar's little excavation, and they had seen the playback of Q-9's scans. None of them had the slightest idea what the massive installation was. All they knew for sure was that it was bound to be trouble sooner or later, and probably sooner. They also knew that someone wanted them to leave, to be scared. And for that reason, it was important that they remain where they were and make it as clear as possible that they had no worries. And so they had determinedly not noticed the CDF, the Corellia Defense Force, and patrol boat hover cars that were forever cruising above and behind them, providing escort. They had ignored the discreet guards that had appeared magically around them in every museum, every historic old building and amusement park. Actually, everyone but Han would be sleeping at Corona House tonight. He had managed to convince Leia that he should drop everyone off and then fly on to the villa and clear out the last of the family's belongings in the morning.
"Chewie," Han said as soon as the door to the Wookiee's quarters had shut behind him,
"I'm going out now, and probably I'll see you in the morning and everything will be fine. But just in case it doesn't go fine, I want you to promise me you'll take care of the kids."
Chewie bared his fangs, took a step toward Han, and grabbed him by both shoulders and lifted him straight into the air.
"Hey, take it easy, will you?"
Han protested, his feet dangling in midair.
"You want to wake up everyone in Corona House? I wasn't forgetting your life debt,
much as I might like to." Han had freed Chewbacca from slavers long ago, and Chewie had sworn to protect Han's life in return. Just at the moment, however, Chewbacca was threatening to tear Han's head off because the Wookiee had taken Han's request to protect them as some sort of suggestion that the Wookiee life debt was not assurance enough, a mortal insult if ever there was one. Han decided to try again.
"All I meant was focus on them. Don't worry about Leia or me. If things get bad enough, it might be that you'll have just a split second to decide what to do. And you've got to decide to get the kids out of danger. Don't think about anything else. Okay?"
Chewie thought for a moment, then nodded and let go of Han, setting him back down on the floor.
"All right, then," Han said, straightening his blouse. "And next time, don't be so touchy."
There were certain advantages to being a nobody from nowhere. The security types might worry about the chief of state, but no one was much worried about what happened to a retired smuggler. Once clear of Leia, Han had good hopes of being able to move around without a herd of Corellian defense forces, babysitters for company. And the same went for the villa. As Leia Organa Solo was not going to be there any longer, the CDF was packing up. Han guided the hover car down toward the villa. He hoped his timing was good enough. If Kalinda had pulled out as well, that was going to be too bad.
In the villa across the street, Kalinda settled herself in for one final vigil. She watched as the last of the CDF agents packed up their gear, got into their ground cars and hover cars, and headed off into the darkness. At precisely the moment that she herself judged that they weren't coming back, a dot of ruby-red light appeared in an upper-story window of Solo's villa.
It flashed 3 times, long. Then there was a pause. 3 more long flashes. Another pause. And another 3 longs. Mon Calamari blink code, carried by a very old-fashioned laser beam. "Beat me at your front door, Muddenides," the signal read. Okay, so he was a little out of practice. But the intent was clear. Kalenda saw him coming up the road, moving at the pace of a fellow out for a late evening stroll. She saw him pause at the path leading to her door, making one last check for whoever else might have stayed behind to watch out there, and then he walked straight up the path to her door. She pulled it open just as he reached the porch, and he came in without breaking stride.
"You've been watching the house the whole time," Han said. "Just in case we were in trouble. Just in case the locals tried anything."
"Yes. Yes." Kalenda realized that her voice was creaky from lack of use. "I'm impressed. I don't think I could have stuck it out."
What do you think is going to happen?" Kalenda asked.
"War," Han said. "Too many people around here are spoiling for a fight. Too many people are playing rough."
Kalenda nodded her agreement. "I think you're right. But you be careful, more careful than you think you need to be. Someone has penetrated deep into the NRI somehow. I came in system in a totally covert setup, and they were waiting for me the second I came out of hyperspace."
Han frowned. "That's worse than I thought. If they know all that, they know how little we have in the way of troops and ships right now. If I were a Corellian who wanted to break free of the Republic and I had access to NRI information, then I think I'd figure that right now was the perfect moment to make my move." Lando Calrissian stepped off the Lady Luck and had the very distinct impression that his luck was changing. At Luke's suggestion, he had called this woman first and had enjoyed some long conversations with her via holocom. And now, there she was, Tendra Reasoned. She was standing just outside the safety barrier, waiting for him to come down off the ship and waving vigorously. That had to mean something. He paused a minute and breathed in the fresh, clean air of Sikoria. Not a bad place, not a bad place at all, even if it was one of the outlier worlds. The outliers had a reputation for trouble, but Lando hadn't seen any signs so far. Lando turned to watch Luke come off the ship.
"You feel nervous about this one?"
Luke laughed and shook his head. "No, not at all. I feel just fine."
"Good, good,"
Lando said as they walked along toward their hostess.
"She looks just fine, too, I might add," he said, casting an appraising eye toward Tendra.
She was about 30 standard years, tall, strong, and healthy, and obviously well off. Her complexion was rather fair, and her high cheekbones and slender face set her dark brown eyes off quite dramatically. She had a nice, if not spectacular, figure, although she was perhaps just a trifle heavier set than was fashionable. She was dressed in a sensible-looking, high-collared blue dress of conservative cut, the hem modestly long without seeming prudish. Her hair was a somewhat nondescript brownish blonde, and she wore it in a short, dignified cut. Everything about her seemed open, relaxed, friendly.
"Hello, Lando," she said as soon as they were close enough. And the warmth in her voice and the smile on her face made Lando feel as if he had known her all his life.
Lando had pursued many women over the years, and his reputation for female conquest was far from exaggerated, but with Tendra he found himself doing something he didn't remember ever having done before. He found himself talking to the woman he was interested in, having an actual conversation with her, about something other than how beautiful she was, or all the lovely things he was going to do for her, or any of the rest of the tired old nonsense. The three of them had dinner at a public restaurant in a handsome old cobblestone square in the center of town, and they talked politics, of all things.
"What is going on in the Corellian system?" Luke asked.
"I've got family there right now."
"Not to mention that we're supposed to head to Corellia next," Lando said. "I'm supposed to meet some people at that trade meeting."
Tendra shook her head sadly. "No one really knows. There are rumors flying in all directions, and proclamations by this Drawl or that Salonian or those humans that they're about to seize power or chase the oppressors from office or whatever. out here we're ruled by the Triad, so it's a little hard for the government to play the My Species First game.
Triad?
Lando asked.
The Triad is a council of three members, a human, Salonian, and a Drawl. They make all the major decisions about policy and so forth. It used to be the Triad wasn't much more than the mouthpiece for the Diktat back in Coronet, but Coronet hasn't taken much of an interest in us the last few years. These days, the Triad pretty much runs to please itself.
And it would seem that it pleases them to clamp down, Lando said.
A squad of rather angry-looking Salonians in police uniforms was coming across the square straight toward the restaurant. Salonians were generally regarded as a rather handsome species, having plainly evolved from lithe, active, swimming mammals with short, sleek fur. But these Salonians were big, burly, thuggish-looking specimens.
Tendra flipped open a little compartment set into the arm of her chair and punched in a quick sequence of commands. There, I just bought you dinner. What do you say we meet our uniformed friends outside instead of causing a scene in here?
You clearly have no flair at all for the dramatic,
Lando said as he stood up.
Tendra smiled broadly as she got out of her chair.
Try me some other time. I might change your mind.
The squad of Salonian police came up to them immediately and did not waste any time in pleasantries.
Calrissian? Skywalker? The paunchiest of them demanded.
That's right, Lando said. What can we do for you, officers?
The head cop smiled unpleasantly and displayed a full set of extremely sharp teeth.
You can get off our planet. Visa's canceled. You've got 6 hours to get off the planet and 18 to get clear of the system. Got it?
Yes, indeed, Lando said, struggling to keep his voice smooth and genteel.
And we were just going in any event.
What if they gave a trade summit? Han muttered. And nobody came. That wasn't exactly fair, but he had seen longer reception lines. He was in his best formal clothes, standing in the lineup with Leia and Governor General McCamberlecto and several other local bigshots. So far, they hadn't had all that many hands to shake. The unsettled situation had clearly frightened off a lot of would-be delegates to the talks, and Han was willing to bet that some of the alleged delegates were really NRI agents. The trade delegations were just too good a cover to pass up.
Quiet, Han, Leia said, keeping the smile on her face. All of these people took big chances coming here for this meeting, so behave yourself and make everyone feel at home.
A pleasure to meet you,
Han said to a regal-looking Salonian female who towered over him by 6 or 7 centimeters. He waited until the Salonian was out of earshot.
I just can't keep this smile pasted on my face much longer, he said.
Well, how about being completely astonished instead? Could you handle that?
I suppose.
Then look who's fourth in line at the moment.
Han looked up.
Mara. Mara Jade. Ex-Emperor's Hand, ex-smuggler. The woman who had sworn to kill Luke and then had a change of heart.
Mara accepted Leia's hand and nodded slightly.
Good evening to you, Madam Chief of State, and to you, Captain Solo. I have a message for you.
Mara directed her attention to Leia.
For you both, and for the Governor General.
A message? Leia asked.
A message cube, to be more exact. I couldn't open it, and I don't mind admitting that I tried. I would suggest that you find a nice, safe room where we can all meet at once.
Leia thought quickly. My apartment's on the 15th floor. They're swept for bugs and listening devices every day. Meet us there in 20 minutes.
Leia ushered Han and McCamberlecto into the apartment, then followed them in, closing the door behind her. Mara was already waiting for them there. Unknown to any of them, the three children were present too, listening at the top of the stairs. Han, Leia, and the Governor General found places on the couches, and Mara pulled the message cube out of her handbag and set it on the low table. None of the others made a move to touch it. They knew it might have been set to activate at the touch of their fingerprints or body chemistry. All three of them leaned in and examined it carefully.
"What's the Rogue Angel 7 business?" Han asked.
"Oh, nothing very much," Leia said. "Just the key phrase for my private diplomatic cipher. Someone wants us to know they can read my mail."
"The thing that I don't understand is why they used me as a courier," Mara said.
whoever they are, they'd have to know that my relations with you people haven't always been of the warmest.
I can answer that, Leia said. You were second choice. Luke was intended to be the courier for this message.
She pointed at the lettering peeking out from under the label. I don't read it myself, but that looks like the written form of Jawa.
Jawa? Mara asked.
The language of a species from Luke's home world, Tatooine.
Luke was going to go meet with Lando about some business deal just before we left, Han said. Lando told me he was planning to go off on a trip before he came to the trade summit here. And my guess is that Luke decided to go along for the ride.
And so he wasn't there to get the message cube, Mara said. So when they couldn't find him, they threw together a backup plan and came looking for me.
It makes sense.
Okay, then, Leia said. Here goes. She reached out gingerly and picked up the cube. It immediately let out a low beeping noise, and there was a loud click. The lid of the cube popped up a millimeter or two.
Cue to my fingerprints, all right, Leia said.
She opened the lid and took out a small black chip. Han dropped it into the slot of the player control, set into the tabletop. A display screen on the wall suddenly stopped being a heroic scene from Corellian history and went blank. And then a screen full of numbers appeared. A male human voice began to speak in Corellian-accented Basic.
This will be your only notification prior to events. Inform no one of this message, and await instructions so as to avoid the need for further action. We will be monitoring all communications. Do not attempt to call for help. Any violation of instructions will result in an acceleration of the schedule.
Han frowned. That voice almost sounded like me. Why would they want to simulate my voice? If they did want to, they didn't do a very good job, Mara said. It's close to your voice, but it's not you exactly.
What are those numbers? Leia asked. Those on the right are static stellar coordinates, Han said, and with three extra decimal places. The Imperial Navy used to do that, but the only people who have them that accurate is the New Republic Navy. Whoever wrote this got their data from the Navy's secret data sets. If I've got this right, those are all points in a rough sphere around the Corellia star system, and the last set of coordinates is for our sun, the star Corell itself. I recognize it from setting our navicomputer on the way in.
The numbers on the left are time notations in astronomical format, Mara said. The first one is about 16 standard days ago. The others are all in the future.
In other words, Han said, something is going to happen in these places at these times unless we do whatever the guy who sounds like me says in his next message.
McCamber Lector stood up to his full height.
Burning, burning skies. 3 days ago, a probot droid came out of the sky and set off a CDF beacon signal. An image of a star explosion with space and time coordinates. Nothing else. The time data was 16 days ago.
Han shrugged. So, someone got imagery of a star blowing up. So what? Mara, when did you get this message?
14 days ago, after the star blew up.
But Luke was supposed to get the message, Leia said. Allowing time for them to discover he wasn't there and to find Mara and get the cube to her, it would have gotten to him before the star exploded.
Han was punching the stellar coordinates into a data pad.
The first star on that list is in an uninhabited system. All the rest of them have inhabited planets. It looks like they're listed in order of population. The second star just has a small outpost, but the next one on the list...
Han checked his numbers and shook his head.
One inhabited planet, population 8 million at the last census. And the last star on the list is Corell.
Do what we say, Leia half-whispered. Do what we say, or we'll kill everybody. In the shadows at the top of the stairs, three small children listened in horror.
In a secret bunker deep under the city of Coronet, the hidden leader of the Human League read over the latest reports with a stern and hard-edged calm. Perhaps his underlings would have expected him to show some sign of excitement or satisfaction that the moment had finally come, that the last piece of the puzzle was finally in place. But that was why he was the leader, and they were underlings.
Let them show their every reaction and emotion for all the world to see. The hidden leader would hide his emotions, as well as his identity. But for all that, the time had come. All was in readiness. Everything he had worked for, schemed for, plotted for, was in place. It was time. The hidden leader dropped the report on his desk and leaned back in his chair. "Begin it," he said.
"Han! Han, wake up! And come to the window!"
Leia was shaking him hard. Han lurched up and stumbled out of bed.
"Devils in space! It started! It started!"
A thick plume of black smoke was rising up out of the city about 3 kilometers away. Han pulled open the window and heard the sounds of sirens, of shouts, of blasters being fired.
"This isn't a coincidence," he said. "It can't be. There are people watching. Once they knew Mara had gotten the message to us, they touched this off. Has to be."
"Come on," Leia said. "We have to find the Governor General."
"What about the kids?" Han asked.
"Chewbacca's with them, and so are Ebrahim and Q-9. They're all right. Come on."
The Camberlector was in his office, where they had watched the torchlight parade.
"It's everywhere. Everywhere," the Governor General said as they came in. "Not just here in Coronet, but all over the planet. The other planets too."
"What about the CDF?" Han asked.
"Almost all the ground forces are still with us, loyal to the Republic. But I have not been able to contact anyone in authority in the space side service."
"And it was the Spaceside CDF that set up that phony attack on us when we were coming in," Han said.
"Forget them as an asset, Governor. They aren't yours anymore. They never were yours."
A comm panel lit on the Governor's desk, and Macambelecto pressed the answer button.
"This is the Governor," he said.
"Sir, this is Captain Boltan, CDF Groundside. My unit was attempting to get to the CDF barracks in the Navy Yard to collect our riot equipment. The Spaceside service has secured the base. I'm pretty sure that I saw people in New Republic uniforms assisting them."
"The Navy?" Leia asked. "The Navy has gone over?"
"No," Han said. "Just the Navy Yard has, though that's bad enough. Don't forget, that used to be the Imperial Navy Yard. Lots of ex-Imperial military, enlisted in the Republic Navy, are here in Corellia. Now we know why."
Macambelecto shook his head.
"We are helpless. Helpless to do more than watch."
Han knew the Governor General was right. There was nothing he could do but go to the window and watch his planet burn.
Chewbacca roared his frustration and punched another hole in the wall. He picked up a lamp and threw it through the hole, and it stuck there.
"It's okay, Chewbacca," Jaina said. "You don't have to be scared."
Chewbacca bared his teeth and stomped to the other side of the room.
"I don't think he's scared, Jaina," Jason said. "You want to fight, don't you, Chewie?"
The first explosion rocked Corona House. The whole building shook and the window blew out. Q-9, moving with incredible speed, knocked his master out of the way of the flying glass and took most of the force of the blast himself. Anakin wailed in terror and buried his head in Jaina's shoulder. Jason was knocked flat by the first blast and had barely gotten to his feet when another explosion, sharper and closer, shook the building. Jason was about to get to his feet again when a huge furry arm scooped him up. Chewbacca already had his brother and sister in his other arm.
"Ebrahim!" Jason shouted. "Chewbacca's taking us to the Millennium Falcon on the roof. Follow if you can."
But Ebrahim had been knocked out by the second blast and was still too dazed to respond. Q-9 extruded a part of his carry arm, scooped up his master, and levitated on his repulsors.
"Lead the way!"
At the second explosion, all the lights and the wired comm lines of Corona House went dead, but the portable comm links were still operational.
"Chewie! Chewie, this is Han! Come in!"
Han had been frantically trying to raise Chewbacca on his comlink since the moment of the first blast.
"Dad, it's me, Jason. Dad, are you and Mom okay?"
"Jason, yes, we're fine. Where are you?"
"We're on the roof, headed for the Falcon. Chewie says we have to leave without you."
He's right, son. Your mother and I have to stay here."
No sense telling him that they had to stay here because the lower turbo lift shaft had almost certainly been blown to bits, along with the stairwell. Han was fairly certain that the explosions had been touched off in order to bottle up the Governor-General in his office. "We'll meet up with you when we can." 2 hours after the double explosions, the Governor-General's office was back in some sort of order. Han found a private corner of the office and pulled out his comlink. "Solo to Kalenda. Come in. Come in, do you read?"
"Kalenda to Solo. I was starting to worry."
"Well, don't stop yet. Things aren't going to get better. I have a job for you. Do you think you could get to the spaceport and steal a ship? One with a hyperdrive?"
"Possibly. It won't be easy."
"Then it's time to do something hard. Besides, I should be able to give you some help. I'm going to try and get out of here an hour after sunset. Do you have a ground car or a hover car at this point?"
"Ground car, yes."
"Good. Then meet me in 3 hours at the corner of Starliner and Volbeck. I have a package for you to deliver." Chewbacca roared as the two patrol boats came back for another pass. The patrol boats had picked him up just after he cleared the atmosphere, and they had been maintaining the pursuit ever since. Ordinarily, a pair of patrol boats would be no match for the Millennium Falcon, but Chewie was flying with a droid, a Drawl, and 3 children for a crew. He had to fly the ship and fight all on his own. He swung the nose of the Millennium Falcon about and made ready for another pass. He fired the forward lasers and took out one of the patrol boats, but the other ship's second shot passed over the starboard wing, laying down intense fire from close range. A lucky shot managed to get in through the shields, and the Falcon shuddered with the force of the hit. Chewbacca didn't need to check the systems board to know that that shot had blown out part of the hyperdrive. They were stuck in the Corellian system. It was an hour short of sunset at Corona House when the next and biggest surprise came. The holo screen and flat view screens tuned to the standard broadcast channels had been showing nothing but static since dawn. Suddenly, the static cleared, and an emblem Han had seen before appeared on the screen to the sound of trumpets blaring and drums pounding a martial beat. The emblem was of a grinning, stylized human skull with a knife in its teeth, and the words, "Human League," underneath. The skull emblem faded out, and a human male face took its place, a face that brought gasps from half the people in the room, and had all of them turning and looking at Han. It was Han's face. Han with black-brown hair that was shot through with gray, Han a few kilos heavier, Han with a beard, Han with a stern expression that did not belong on his face, and yet the resemblance was close enough to be eerie.
"Humans of Corellia,"
the man in the holovid said, and that was enough to evoke another gasp from everyone in the office. The man had Han's voice as well.
"I am the hidden leader of the Human League of Corellia, and I do now hereby reveal myself to you. My name is Thrakken Sal Solo."
"He's my cousin," Han said. The past that he thought he had escaped had caught up with him again. "My first cousin, my father's sister's son. He is not a nice man, to put it mildly. I thought he died years ago, before I left Corellia, back when he dropped completely out of sight."
"At least it explains why that Human League mob grabbed you and then let you go," Leia said. "They must have thought you were someone doing a bad job of pretending to be him. And it was his voice on the recording."
Thrakken Sal Solo continued,
"My trusted comrades and I have worked long and hard for this day. Now, finally, the day of our liberation from the oppressive all-species policy of the traitorous New Republic is at hand. I hereby declare the secession of the Corellian sector from the New Republic. For those of you who doubt that my colleagues and I have the power to back up these pronouncements, let me say more. About 2 weeks ago, a supernova explosion occurred on the outskirts of the Corellian sector. The de facto Governor General of the New Republic government has recently been provided with convincing proof that it was the Human League who caused that explosion. The Human League stands ready to cause further stellar explosions if our just demands are not met. We hereby demand that the so-called New Republic commence immediate operations to deport all Drawl and Salonians and other non-humans off the planet of Corellia within 30 standard days. Otherwise, we will be forced to proceed with plans for our next stellar detonation."
It was Leia's turn to object.
Is he insane? Even if we brought every transport in the galaxy, there wouldn't be enough time to evacuate them all. And where would we put them?
The future is ours. Thank you all, and good night.
The holovid went blank. Suddenly it was filled with static, and then with blindingly bright flares of color.
Jamming!
Han shouted over the noise. Someone shut off the holovid, and silence returned.
It's on all channels, one of the comm techs announced.
So that's why they could tell the people, and still tell us not to tell the universe, Leia said. But if all communications are blanked out, how are we supposed to negotiate? Or call in transports, for that matter?
I have a feeling we'll find out, Han said. But I'm not playing by his rules anyway. I'm going to meet Kalenda in a little over an hour and hand her a copy of the data chip we got last night. I'm going to create as big a diversion as I can and hope she can steal a ship and go for help.
I can't help noticing that you're not asking for permission to do this, Leia said. But at least you're being straight and telling me about it.
Then I'll keep on being straight and say that I doubt I'll be coming back anytime soon, he replied. The guy creating the diversion is usually the one who gets caught, and this time I don't think they'll let me go because I look like the boss.
Then we don't have much time, Leia said, putting her arms around him and laying her head on his shoulder.
We never do, Princess, he said. We never do.
That's not going to work, Anakin said, looking over Chewbacca's shoulder. You'll have to go outside to fix it.
The Wookiee let his irritation show as he traced out the burned circuit.
I'm not either, Anakin said. I don't have to guess.
He pointed to a component that Chewbacca hadn't gotten to yet.
See? This toroidal reflector went pow! Has to be because the starboard ion regenerator misaligned. Nothing else could do that.
Chewbacca looked at the reflector. It had indeed burned out.
Q-9 hovered in irritatingly close. Chewbacca resisted the urge to throw him against the compartment.
Interesting. It would appear Anakin is correct, which means there is no hope of reaching hyperspace until we can land and make repairs. As there is not much chance of our returning safely to Corellia, I would suggest we try to reach Drow. My master's people are there, and we have at least some hope of a peaceful reception.
Chewbacca leaned back against the bulkhead and moaned to himself. He had reached precisely the same conclusion 10 minutes before. There was nothing worse than a smart-aleck droid, except for a smart-aleck droid who was right.
Kalenda watched Han as he drove the ground car. So far, it had all gone well, in fact, remarkably well, considering the level of chaos in the city. They had passed any number of burning buildings, shot-up vehicles, and dead bodies. She looked again at the data chip he had given her to carry back to Mon Mothma. It contained a copy of the threat message, along with whatever other information the staff of the governor's office could think of to include. The ground car swerved onto a washed-out road.
"Okay, slow down," she said. "Shut off all your lights and stop here for a moment."
Han stopped the engine. Kalenda grabbed her macro binoculars and got out, gesturing for Han to follow her. She dropped to her knees and crawled up a low rise to her left, and promptly cut her arm on a patch of razor grass. She put her macro binoculars to her eyes.
"Let's see. No, nothing there but patrol boats. No hyperdrive. Wait a second. There. An X-tie ugly, about 500 meters from the perimeter fence."
"I hate uglies," Han said. "But it's your call. You're sure it'll have hyperdrive?"
"It ought to. Besides, there's nothing else out there I'd even have a chance of reaching."
"Then I'll see you on the other side."
Han gave her a jaunty salute, then crawled backward down the hill to the ground car.
This was going to be interesting.
Han checked his seatbelt, switched the lights back on, and gunned the engine hard. The lumbering old ground car tore its way over the rise, smashing down the stand of razor grass as it went over the top. A series of fast blaster shots flashed out to the right of the car as Kalenda shot up the section of perimeter fence directly in his path. The blaster shots were right on target, but the fence stayed up.
The car lunged down the other side of the rise and smashed into the fence head-on. It slammed its way through, and Han fought to keep control as the car bucked and swayed over the uneven ground. Finally, its wheels hit the hard tarmac of the landing field, and Han was back in control. A blaster shot fired out of the darkness and struck the pavement just in front of the ground car. Han fired wildly in the general direction of the shot, not really expecting to hit anything, but a flare of light exploded in the middle distance as a fuel tank went up, and Han was happy to take the bonus. He was almost at the first pocket patrol boat. He dropped the blaster, juggled his hands to keep one on the wheel, while he reached for a mini detonator with the other. The patrol boat went up with a flash of light. Han looked back toward the fence and spotted a small figure dressed in black, running for all she was worth, straight for the X-tie. "Go!" he shouted, though she could not possibly hear him. "Go!" Bits of flaming patrol boat were starting to drop out of the sky all around him, and he wove back and forth across the tarmac, struggling to avoid them all. Another blaster bolt! But this one hit his ground car right in the engine. The vehicle instantly burst into flame, and Han decided it was time to be elsewhere. He rolled out of the ground car and landed hard on his pocket full of detonators. He got to his feet and trotted forward, using the rolling, burning, smoking ground car for cover as he headed for the next patrol boat. The spaceport guards were starting to respond. Han could see the lights of vehicles heading toward him and airborne patrol boats coming in. Han pulled out his last three detonators, punched in the timer studs, and threw them as far as he could in every direction but that of the X-Tie. Explosions all around him, he watched with a smile on his face as the X-Tie Ugly flew directly over his head and headed for the sky. No way the patrol boats could catch that thing with a real pilot in it. The spaceport guards were starting to converge. A spotlight from an approaching security hover car caught Han in its beam. He laughed, threw down his blaster, put his hands over his head, and waited for them to come get him. Mission accomplished. One of those people who always wanted something of her was waiting for Leia when she finished inspecting the devastation in what had been her family's apartment. She saw him watching her come back downstairs, hoping for the nod from her, the gesture that would allow him to approach, a very young, very earnest technician with the inevitable data pad in his hands. People like him were always waiting for her wherever she went. Couldn't they give her any peace? The answer, of course, was that they could not. There was a galaxy to run, and never enough time to do it. Other people's families were in jeopardy this night, and they were trusting in Leia to put things right. She pushed her sorrow to one side and walked briskly over to the young technician. "Ma'am, there's something I think you need to know. I work in the comms section. I noticed some very strange readings on the gravimetric sensors. What it boils down to is that something seems to be disrupting real space in the same way an interdiction ship does." She immediately gave the earnest young man her full attention. An interdiction ship did one thing and one thing only: generate gravitic energy in such a way that hyperspace could not form in its vicinity. Ships inside an interdiction field could not jump to hyperspace, and ships in hyperspace that passed through an interdiction field were abruptly, sometimes violently, decanted out into normal space. "Tell me more." "Well, right now it's a fairly weak effect, but it's getting stronger by the minute, as if there were a very powerful interdiction generator just warming up very slowly. But that's not the bad part." "What is the bad part?" "The size of the interdiction zone, ma'am. If this field keeps growing at the present rate, it's going to blanket the entire Corellian star system." For the first time, the fear in his voice came through. "It means that we're not going to get any help." Leia Organa Solo found a place to be alone in an empty, windowless conference room across from the Governor General's office. Her family was lost to her, lost to the depths of space. The Corellian system, in a single day, had somehow found a way to backslide into the worst sort of irrational species hatred, the sort of thing that should have been left in the slime 1,000 generations before. Neighbor had turned against neighbor in a three-way fight that could only grow more vicious as the wounds cut deeper.
and the Corellian sector had seceded from the New Republic in a way that could only tempt others to do the same. She knew how fragile the fabric of the New Republic still was. She knew how easy it would be to tear it to shreds, how impossible it would be to put it back together. But there were plenty of other worries besides mere politics. Where had Mara Jade gone? She had vanished. How were a bunch of thugs like the Human League capable of stealing the most secret New Republic data? How were they able to blow up stars on command? Were they truly capable of exterminating an entire living star system if they did not get their way? And who was producing this massive new interdiction field? And they were all counting on her. If she made only the slightest effort, used the least of ability in the Force, she could quite literally feel their need there in the Governor General's office. They needed her, had faith in her, believed that she would find the way out of this for all of them. And she did not have the least idea what to do next. Leia reached down deep into herself, into the power of the Force, and searched for the strength that would let her hang on. Luke Skywalker made his way back to the control cabin of the Lady Luck and sat down in the co-pilot seat.
"Almost there," Lando said, glancing up from his seat at the pilot station. "Good," Luke said, strapping himself in. "It'll be good to see Han and Leia and the kids again."
Suddenly, the Lady Luck shuddered from stem to stern and went into a violent tumble.
"Luke!" Lando shouted as he wrestled with the attitude controls. "It's an interdiction field. It's knocked us out of hyperspace. Shut down the hyperdrive motors before they burn out."
Luke reached out and shut down the hyperdrive, silencing most of the alarms. Lando pulled the ship out of its tumble and hit a series of reset commands, quieting the last of the alerts. Luke let his friend work. He could sense something. A huge and powerful disturbance in the Force. He closed his eyes and reached out with the Force.
"What was that?" Lando demanded when he finally had the ship put to rights. "What maniac would put an interdiction field way out here in the middle of nowhere?"
"Not out here," Luke said as he opened his eyes. "In there." He pointed through the view screen toward the still distant point of light that was the star Corel, at least 2 months' travel away at sublight speeds. "It's very weak and very subtle, but I can feel the way it interacts with the Force. We've just hit the fringes of an interdiction field that covers the whole Corellian star system."
"Are you nuts? No one could build a field that big, no one."
"Well, someone has. It's here. We've just run into the edge of it." Luke reached out again, this time trying not to sense the shape of a field in space, but the feel of the mines in the Corellian system. He did not try to reach any one mind, but instead to get some overall sense of emotion. The power of what he got back astonished him. Hate, fear, anger, revenge, terror. All the dark emotions were running wild in the minds of the Corellian system. "Lando, turn this ship around. We're not more than a few hundred kilometers inside the interdiction field. Fly us back out of the interdiction field in normal space, and then set a light-speed course for Coruscant. We need to go for help. Now." Lando seemed about to protest, but then he stopped.
"You're right. You're absolutely right."
He took up the controls and began turning the ship around.
"Hurry, Lando."
Luke looked out the viewport again, to the gleaming light of Corel.
"Hurry. I've got a bad feeling about this."
To be continued.
This is Anthony Heald. We hope you have enjoyed this production of Ambush at Corellia by Roger McBride Allen. This program was produced by David Rapkin and directed by Lars Hoel, abridgment by Trevi Johnson. Ambush at Corellia is a production of Lucasfilm Limited, copyright 1995, all rights reserved.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.